Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello and welcome to Wednesday's podcast. Thank you for downloading today's episode on February 25th. Plenty of news to get you through the middle of the working week, including an update on the next phase of EU border checks at Dover. We'll hear from a mum who was diagnosed with multiple brain tumours after twice beating breast cancer. And Chatham has launched a bid to be the UK's town of culture. Stay listening. We'll bring you all of that and lots more. But first, taking a look at our top story for today. A woman's been left in temporary accommodation following a devastating fire at her home in Ashford. It's after the blaze broke out at the three-bedroom property in Beaver Lane last month. Reporter Louis Walker has been following this story for the Kent Online podcast. He's kindly agreed to answer some questions. First of all, Louis, can you give us a bit more information about the fire?
The blaze ripped through Claire Byer's three-bedroom house in Beaver Lane, South Ashford, on Sunday, January 4th, and has left the building with extensive damage across the ground floor. Four fire engines and a hype vehicle were at the scene for around 2 hours tackling the flames. The fire service believe it was started accidentally and has been linked to an electrical fault within an extension lead.
Now, since the blaze, Claire has been living in temporary accommodation. Why is it now she's been told she won't be able to go back?
So yes, immediately after the fire, Claire was placed in a hotel for a week before a move to temporary accommodation in another area of Ashford. Originally, she was told she would be able to move back to her home of more than 25 years once repairs had been completed. However, Ashford Borough Council has now said that the house is uninhabitable due to the scale of the damage, with repairs expected to take more than 6 months. Under the authority's decant policy, such a lengthy timescale means affected residents will be permanently rehoused rather than returning to their current address.
This must be devastating news for Claire and for her family. You were able to speak to her. Could you tell us how she's reacted to the news?
Simply, the family are devastated by the news. This is the home she's brought all seven of her children up in, and now she will never be able to return. What added to the heartbreak was fire damage and contamination from asbestos within the Beaver Lane property have also meant that no personal possessions can be returned. They also say the council gave them false hope, initially telling them Claire would be able to return, which ultimately has not been the case. It's an incredibly stressful time for the family, who have had to register Claire on ABC's housing register, but have no timeline on when she will move to her next permanent address.
And finally, council have provided a statement. What did they say?
A spokesperson for ABC described the situation as unfortunate and explained that when tenants have to leave their council property because it's uninhabitable, they initiate a decant policy. This means that if repairs are required and will take more than 6 months, they will permanently move the household to another property. It became clear after initial assessments that this would be the case in Beaver Lane. They added that the council will continue to support the family through their transition into a suitable home.
Thanks, Louis. You can read more about this story by heading over to our website.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today. Three men who were due to go on trial for murder after a man was hit and killed by a car in Sittingbourne have been cleared after one admitted manslaughter. Jay Garrett died after falling from a wall into the path of a vehicle during a knife point chase in the town centre last August. Chris McLean, who's 43 and from Pembury Court in the town, is due to be sentenced tomorrow. A Folkestone man who punched a Good Samaritan that had tried to intervene in a row has been jailed. Darren Scheller left his victim with a severe facial injury after it happened while he argued with his then-girlfriend in July last year. The 46-year-old, who doesn't have a permanent address, has been locked up for 22 months. Now, the boss at the Port of Dover has told the Kent Online podcast the site is ready for the next phase of EU border checks. The entry-exit system started being phased in last October and will be rolled out fully on April 10th. There have been concerns about technical problems with kiosks for the new biometric checks over in France. Our reporter Sam Lennon has been speaking to Port of Dover CEO Doug Bannister.
The work that's been completed is that we have our entire coach facility up and operational. It's being used today. We have our car process island one all ready to go as soon as the French are ready to turn on the technology. We have the brand new road built across the site that we needed to put in place for the EES. That's all completed. The new entrance into the site is all completed. The work that's still going on now is in the area of car process islands 2 and 3. The process island 2 has all its enclosures installed, and 3 is on its way as well, ready for the technology to be installed. And then it's just a matter of paving the area and we'll be good to go. The intention is to have that all in place at the time when we need to move into that implementation phase.
And when do you think it'll be physically, the site will physically be completed?
Well, the site will physically be completed probably before summertime when we get into the big rush. But certainly for the capacity that we need, that we require for Easter, that will be online when we need to have it.
Right. So you're hopeful. I mean, for years now, Devoren's just used to clog up the traffic at these peak times. And as I say, they learn to adapt by simply not using the car in those times, walking in or just staying at home. How hopeful are you that the traffic will flow smoothly this time, that there'll be no such disruption?
So the busy periods that we have leading up to this were certainly last Christmas and indeed this Feb half term, and then Easter will be the next challenge that we have. Over Christmas, we had really one challenging day, and that was when there was a catenary failure in the tunnel, the electric overhead wires for the trains. And so that we had an influx of passengers, both from Eurostar and from Eurotunnel, come through. But that all handled seamlessly. Over the last few years, we've been spending a lot of time ensuring that our traffic management protocols keep the town of Dover clear. We have increased presence out on all the junctions. We put out the right notifications. And it's all been working largely pretty well. We do have our days where we still have some challenges, of course.
Mm-hmm. But it's perfect, yeah.
But the site that we've designed for the ES is completely geared to be able to handle our peak flows of traffic without any congestion out on the external road network. That's how it's been designed. And so we've got high confidence that as long as everything works according to plan, there won't be any problems. Of course, there could be challenges in the form of, you know, weather delays or technical challenges or whatever. But we've got, nowadays, we've got quite a robust contingency system that's in place that we get traffic moving again just as quickly as we can.
Elsewhere, there could soon be regular freight trains running through the Channel Tunnel. The government's announced a new deal, which will see Network Rail take over a depot in East London and turn it into an international logistics hub. It means businesses will be able to send cargo to Europe via Folkestone, which we're told is more environmentally friendly.
Kent Online News.
A Kent mum has been telling us how she's been diagnosed with two brain tumours after already being treated for breast cancer twice. Rose Biggs had surgery and chemotherapy after finding two separate lumps in the space of a year. The 35-year-old from Dartford then started experiencing new symptoms last December.
About 3 weeks before Christmas, I started just getting really bad headaches and my vision was going a bit funny. And I thought, oh, I need glasses. And I thought, oh, it's just the stress of Christmas, you know, running around getting presents and all of that. And it was sort of like tension headaches, like at the front of my head. And then I booked an optician's appointment. They were getting quite bad. They were coming and going. It wasn't constant. It was like come and go, come and go. And then when I was at work, I had a really bad one. And I thought, oh, maybe, I don't know, just because of everything, maybe should I just ring the doctors. And my friend said to me, she was like, please just ring the doctors. And I was like, yeah, I will. So I spoke to them on the phone. And then because of my history, they were like, oh, well, I want you to come in and we'll do blood pressure, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, okay. So I went into my doctor's and then she was like, I want to send you up for an MRI at Darren Valley. So I was like, okay. And then she booked me in for like a couple of days after. Sorry. And then I had to wait for an MRI at the hospital because I wasn't actually booked in, but they were so busy. I had to wait. I had to actually stay in overnight. And there was no beds for me either. They wouldn't let me leave because I needed to be inpatient. And then I slept in a corridor on a bed and then I went down for the MRI in the morning and then it went from there. It all went so fast because obviously they came and told me about 2 hours I had to wait for the results and just said like, you've got multiple tumours, but they weren't very good because they wouldn't tell us anything else. So me and Sam panicking and thought, oh my God, multiple, is it two or is it five? Is it, you know, how many is it? And then obviously I got straight on the phone to my hospital, like Barts, and just said, like, this has happened. Because we just didn't really think it. Obviously, I just thought it might be pressure or I don't know. I just don't really know. One was at the back of my head. That was removed 3 weeks ago. And then I've still got one at my temple. So that's still affecting my vision. Yes, there's one at the back was the bigger one. And then the one at the side is quite small, so they can't really get to it, and it's quite dangerous because it's on the left temple, so they wouldn't want to operate. But that's where we're at.
Her husband is now taking on the Three Peaks Challenge to raise money for cancer research. An MP has stepped in to try and help residents in Rootham who've been without mains electricity to their homes for 8 months. People living in Pilgrim's Way have been relying on a generator for heating and power since June last year. It's thought the problem is due to a fault with an underground transformer in a nearby field, and there's a dispute over access. Tom Tugendhat is in contact with UK Power Networks. A Kent Hospital Trust has been revealed as one of only three in the country meeting a major cancer target. The NHS wants patients to begin treatment within 62 days of an urgent referral. Maidstone and Tunbridge Wells Trust is slightly above that figure. Others in the county are at least 10% below. The new Restore Britain group at Kent County Council has chosen its leaders. Paul Thomas will head up the party with Maxine Fothergill as deputy. They were both previously expelled from Reform UK and are vowing to fight in an upcoming by-election in Thanet. It's been confirmed an Ashford building that's been abandoned for years will be knocked down to make way for flats. Swanton House in Elwick Road has been empty for two decades and will be replaced with two new four-storey blocks. Hoardings have been put up before demolition work gets underway. Plans have been put in to build a hydrogen plant in Sittingbourne. The people behind it want to develop a site at the Kemsley Fields Business Park on Ridham Dock Road. It's a zero-carbon way of producing energy. We're told the project would create 14 jobs.
Kent Online News.
Specialist teachers in Kent who advise schools about SEN issues are going on strike. It follows a row with the County Council, with members of the National Education Union complaining about unacceptable changes to their working conditions. A rally is being held outside County Hall in Maidstone today. Two private schools in Kent are going to merge. St Lawrence College has announced it'll be closing its site in Ramsgate and joining forces with Dover College. The new school will be called St Lawrence Dover College and will be based in Effingham Crescent. The first council tenants have now moved into new affordable homes in Folkestone. Bosses approved the purchase of 44 properties at the Risborough Barracks development in Shorncliffe in October 2024. They're all energy efficient to keep bills low for those who are renting them. There are plans to revive key sites in Thanet thanks to new Pride in Place funding. Margate Museum, Piermont Park in Broadstairs and the Sarah Thorne Theatre are due to get a share of the £1.5 million government cash. Council bosses say they want to revitalise community spaces. A public consultation's expected to start next week. Now, Chatham's launching a bid to become the first UK town of culture. It's being led by the town's historic dockyard and is supported by Medway Council. Whoever wins the accolade for 2028 will secure £3 million of funding, while two other finalists will get £250,000. Richard Morsley is chief executive of the dockyard.
£3 million for a cultural programme in Chatham would have such an impact. We could do some really incredible work in this place with that money. But it goes beyond the money, actually. This is about cultural organisations working together with a real scale of ambition around what this place is and what this place can and could be, should be in the future, and delivering really high quality cultural program for the benefits of the residents of Chatham, but actually really putting this place on a map locally, regionally, nationally and internationally. And I just think it's a really exciting opportunity in that for us.
I was going to say, how important is it to put Chatham on the map? Because as far as tourists are concerned, there are obviously key destinations that they come to, yours being one of them. How important is it that they know a bit more about Chatham as a whole and visit other parts of the town?
I think that Chatham as a destination, and that perception of Chatham as a destination is something that can absolutely be shaped by a cultural programme such as this. There are wonderful organisations working within Chatham. There are incredible cultural destinations, not least the historic Dockyard Chatham, but a whole range of other cultural partners working in and around Chatham. And this just really gives an opportunity, I think, to bring that all together, to package that work, and to put that on a national stage, really, for creativity and culture. And I think that perception of a place, and the the regeneration benefit almost that can be born of a program like this to a destination like Chatham can't really be overstated.
And talking of regeneration, just up the road from you, obviously, you've got the Brook Theatre. And I mean, the reopening of that would time in very, very nicely with this, wouldn't it? If it were to win the bid.
Oh, the timing of this is really fantastic. So, as you say, we have the Brook Theatre opening 2027. We also have Docking Station, which is a fantastic new centre for digital, creative, and cultural industries that will be opening in 2027. And this builds on a program of creative and cultural production that takes place already within this place. And so I think you start to bring that all together, and we will be able to operate and work at a scale, and really deliver a truly exciting program of creative and cultural activity.
Thanet has already launched its bid, while Folkestone and Deal have also said they're interested.
Kent Online News.
Barstow's behind a project to protect a flock of local swifts in Maidstone, say it's bringing the community together. Council have handed out 50 free boxes for people living in key streets where there have been recorded nesting and breeding. It's after a survey identified colonies in the area are in urgent need of safe nesting spaces this spring. I was able to speak to Councillor Tony Harwood about the initiative.
Swifts are a bird that was once ubiquitous in our urban areas, but since the 1990s, they've declined by some 60% in the UK, which is a huge fall in numbers. And these really charismatic birds that, with the sickle-shaped wings that swoop along our streets and have a kind of a piercing call, kind of a scream almost. They've just almost evaporated. They've gone nowhere. So Maidstone Council, through its Nature Recovery grant funding, has delivered letters to a neighbourhood in North Maidstone, and that's centred upon Waterlow Road, Grecian Street, Salisbury Road, and Curzon Road, which are all off Boxley Road in North Maidstone, offering free boxes and free installation within the eaves of their houses to hopefully provide nesting sites when these migratory birds return from Africa in late April, early May.
And I understand that there's been a really positive take up. In fact, I think all of the boxes on offer have been claimed by residents, so people are keen to be involved.
We offered 50 nest boxes, and I delivered letters within the four streets that were the focus of the project. And literally within days, we saw all of the potential places fully subscribed. And what we are doing now is we've got the list of individuals who have kindly offered to host a swift nest box in their eaves, and we have offered to go out, see them, look at their houses to make sure that we find the right place, which is good for the home owner or the resident, and for the birds. And we will get them installed in time for the arrival of the swifts at the end of April, beginning of May. And it's really important that we act quickly, because last summer you'll remember, we had a really good early summer, and it was really good for the swifts. So we actually had a successful breeding year, certainly in North Maidstone. So there will be youngsters coming back who will not have a nest hole. So all the places probably which are in that neighbourhood are already taken. So it's really important that we get these new nesting niches in place so that that colony can go from strength to strength.
And now we were speaking before, and you said that this project has had a really lovely effect on the community, and that it has been bringing people together. What can you tell me about that?
Yeah, the streets which have been the focus of the project in North Maidstone, they're really diverse in terms of their residents. And quite often there's not a lot in common between the individuals there, and people get on with their lives. However, the Swift Project, it's alerted locals that there's something different and special about their patch. And getting out there when I'm delivering letters, when I'm just walking through the streets and things, there is a real kind of buzz around talking about this, that there is something really special about those Victorian terrace streets. And I genuinely think that it has brought that community together. And it's really interesting that other nature conservation projects are burgeoning coming out of this. People are thinking about how they look after their garden. You see lots of front gardens which are kind of tarmacked over for parking and things. But now we're thinking, you know, if we've got these rare birds and they need the flying insects, then we've got to have a rough area in the corner of the garden with some long grass. It'd be really good to have a pond, to have some native trees and shrubs or a hedge so that we sustain the insects as well. So we've got not just the places for them to nest, but we've also got the food for them so that they can bring up their families.
A baby chimpanzee has been born at Wingham Wildlife Park near Canterbury. The little one was sadly rejected by her mother, so he's being hand-reared by keepers. She's the third critically endangered Western chimpanzee to be born at the park in the last 8 years. We've shared her picture at Kent Online. And a Kent school's won a top prize for the work it's doing to tackle climate change. Goatleys Primary in Ashford say they'll be creating a butterfly-friendly garden in an area of their ground. With the money they've been given, teachers have teamed up with a local university to help teach children about conservation skills. That's all from us today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. You can also get the details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And while you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium. It gives you access to content with fewer ads, no pop-ups and exclusive stories. You can choose a subscription plan that works best for you. For more details, head to kentonline.co.uk/subscribe.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.